हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So Tudamani, please clearly describe association with devotees and the performance of activities that lead to devotional service. What kind of pious deeds are these? Vaishnava Das. Conversing with a pure devotee, serving him and hearing his explanations, all these I can call association with devotees. Chanting the holy names in towns and cities in the company of other devotees and other like activities are all activities of devotional service. Giving charity and performing yoga when connected to devotional service are activities that lead to devotional service. In the scriptures, it is said that, so he's given three kinds here, is association with devotees, what is considered devotional service, and then what is considered pious activities that lead to devotional service. The conversation then before was, is how, means the whole point that was being made is that one only comes to devotional service by pious activities. And so then his point is, well, how does this Mohammedan person, how does he come to devotional service because they don't perform pious activities? So then Vaishnava Das has made a distinction between material pious activities and spiritual pious activities. So giving in charity, performance of yoga, doing these different austerities or sacrifices, these are just considered piety. But when they're done in connection to devotional service to please Krishna, then they lead to bhakti. Like that. Means here, the definition of bhakti meaning pure devotional service. So we have to see is that there'll be in these kind of discussions, we have to be able to distinguish between them. And sometimes they're calling bhakti meaning, devotion meaning, from the beginning stages all the way to the perfectional stage. And sometimes they describe bhakti or devotion as the perfectional stage, and then before that it's called leading to. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to distinguish, because you'll have both means it's both describing the same thing. One is saying, they're both agreeing that at pure devotional service, that's devotion, that's bhakti. And before that, then, because it's connected to bhakti, one calls it bhakti, because it's as good as, because it will lead to. The other one is saying that it's leading to bhakti. Right? You understand? They're both saying it's leading to bhakti. They're both saying bhakti starts when at perfection. They're both saying that these other activities connected to bhakti then bring one to bhakti. One leaves it at, it brings you to bhakti. The other one says that it is also counted as bhakti. You understand? So sometimes this is brought up as two different opinions. But it's the same opinion, just taken from two different angles. The one is to encourage us that since it is by performing these preliminary activities, it will bring you to the perfectional platform, then we are inspired to do them. Because if we simply say to a new person that anything short of perfection is not perfection, then where do you start? How will you be inspired? Right? So therefore, then these two explanations are there. But for someone who is in the middle or advanced stages of this process of leading to bhakti, then they become, with this understanding, become more and more attuned to the details, to see that they're performing those activities that lead to devotional service properly. Right? That they're bringing them more and more in line with devotional service, so that brings, it increases the devotion. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. At the same time, this is meaning with those activities. Then it's made other activities, you're chanting Hare Krishna and these things, that are direct service, that those are service, those are devotional activities. Though they may not be pure. You see that? Mm-hmm. It means they're devotional service. But it may not be on the platform of pure devotional service. While these other things that are engaging, like according to Varnashram and that then, if it's done to please Krishna, helps lead one to devotional service. If it's not done for Krishna, it just creates pious results. Pious results. Does this make any sense or something? Like that. So that we understand the difference in the terminologies and approaches.
And is it because he's saying if it's connected to devotional service, then it's considered to be the activities which leads to devotion?
Yeah, it means if it's not, it just it'll lead to heavenly planets or the Brahman.
And that understanding makes somebody to think, oh, am I doing activities which are connected or not?
Yeah.
And he can purify his process.
Yeah, because let's say you take care of your family, right? If someone has a family, then those needs are there. They have needs, that's why they're in family life. Family has needs, that's why then all this is going on. But if you connect it to Krishna, then performing those household duties connected to Krishna will also help bring one closer to devotional service. Right? At the same time, is then one has to cultivate things that are directly devotional service. Chanting the Lord's holy names and engaging in these kind of activities. Worshipping the deity. Because both have to be done. In other words, the devotional activities that are direct, those are increasing our attraction to Krishna. Right? And the other activities, the pious activities that are connected to Krishna, are decreasing our attraction and attachment to non-devotional things, or things of this world. Right? Therefore, it leads to Krishna. Just like you want the boat to go. The boat goes by rowing. Right? But if you don't pull up the anchor, there's no use in rowing. Therefore, the process of pulling up the anchor leads to being able to row the boat. You understand? Like that. So if you don't pull up the anchor, that's why it says always remember Krishna, never forget. It's one rule, but it has these two parts. So what it makes us forget Krishna, that is the things of attachment to this world. It's like the anchor. So even though we perform devotional service, then we have a tendency to be attached here, so we don't really move forward much. Right? So then you have to pull that anchor out. But if you just pull out the anchor and don't establish devotional service, then it's like the impersonals. They give up the material world, but they don't accept the spiritual world. So then they get stuck in just the Brahman understanding. So therefore, then you have to cultivate those things that are connected to Krishna. And that attracts us to Krishna. That makes us always remember Krishna. And pulling up the anchor is the process of never forgetting Krishna. You understand? So you get the positive and the negative. So because it's in connection to, therefore it's also considered positive. It's progressive, because it's leading to, it's taking us towards devotional service. But here, devotional service, meaning these activities of devotional service, but also that we may perform in a not necessarily pure fashion, but also, it's removing things that make us perform it in an impure way. Right? Even we say, okay, so I should just perform the devotional activities. That's great if one can do that. One can always be chanting and hearing and doing these things. That's nice. That's best. That's the preferred method. But if one finds that there's more attachments than this, then there's more attachments, then we find the difficulty comes is our devotional performance of those activities of devotional service, will be mixed with material desire. So by engaging that material desire in Krishna's service, then it purifies that, and it leads us to proper devotional service. So it leads us both to the performance of the process of devotional service is not yet pure. At the same time, you can say it's leading us to devotional service, meaning pure devotional service. Right? It means it directly doesn't give. It allows us to perform the devotional activities that we're performing better. And those activities will then give bhakti. Because bhakti gives bhakti. Right? Varnashram can't give bhakti. The varnashram done to please Krishna then will purify us so that our performance of sadhana bhakti, or, you know, will be progressive. You understand? Means if one has no material attachments, or minimal, then the activities of the varnashram aren't so important. So then one can be engaged more in just straight devotional activities. Right? That's why it's said, if someone can remain out of marriage and just be always engaged in hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord and doing service, worshipping the deity, that's the best path. Because then you're only performing the activities of devotional service. Right? Though, maybe not in a pure way, because we haven't come to perfection. But it's better, because it's always that. But if one has the need, then one takes up the activities of the varnashram system, you know, gets married and performs the necessary duties. And by doing that for Krishna, then that will lead us to performing those activities that are devotional service, but not yet pure, that will get us to the pure platform. So it simultaneously gets us to do those activities, and it simultaneously makes us able to go forward. Understand? So it does both. Understand? Because the reason it's mixed is because of our need for the activities of varnashram. Right? So if you remove those desires, not the activities, the desires, then the performance goes quicker. Right? So you can say is it leads to bhakti, because bhakti means the perfection. But it's leading to bhakti not directly, but it helps the other things. Because if you just perform varnashram duties for Krishna in this age, it will not give perfection. Other ages, yes, but in the Kali Yuga, no. Because people don't have the good qualities that people had in other ages that they could focus so much and perform those duties properly. Right? So that is being done for Krishna. That itself was devotion, so therefore it would bring one to the point of pure bhakti. Right? But here, then the sankirtan mission, the hearing, the chanting, remembering, all these things, then that becomes the most prominent. So therefore then, performing the varnashram duties to please Krishna, then establishes us better in the performance of activities that are directly devotional service. So that by that performance, then we'll come to the professional platform of pure devotional service. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right there? Does that make sense to you in the back? Yeah? Like that. So it's a fine point, because of this overlying point, then so much, misunderstandings come up. Some will say we don't need varnashram, some will say we have to have varnashram. The varnashram is a social system because we need we're a social animal. Right? But right now we're a social animal on the mundane platform. Therefore varnashram. But we have to come to the transcendental platform, where social life means interaction with Krishna and the devotees on the platform of pure devotional service. Right? So as long as that need is there, then that's what varnashram is for. So if it itself is material and will only give material result, but if it's connected to Krishna, then the spiritual result it gives is that you will lose the taste and need for the material endeavor, the material goals, and it will help situate one properly on the devotional path. Like that. So it helps get rid of the one, and because it's getting rid of that, that's what helps put you on the path. Right? But if you're not already on the path, then it itself may not do so much in this age. Like that. That's why it's the third system. The prominence is the Bhagavat. The secondary is the Pancharatra. You know? And the third is Varnashram. Like that. While in other ages, Pancharatra would be the main, or Varnashram would be the main. But in this age, then it's not the chanting of the holy names. Thank you. Thanks. Chanting of the holy names, that is the prominent. That is the main feature. In the scriptures it is said that cleaning the temple of Lord Hari, offering a lamp to Tulsi Devi, fasting on Ekadasi, and other like activities are activities of devotional service. Even if they are performed without pure faith, or even if they are performed accidentally, these pious activities still increase one's devotion to the Lord, for the Lord. When these pious deeds gradually become powerful, after many births, they lead to pure faith in the association of devotees, and the performance of pure devotional service. The word Vastu Shakti means that everything has a certain innate power. The activities of devotional service have the power to increase one's love and devotion for the Lord, even if they are performed without faith, or even if they are performed with contempt, they still bring good results. What to speak of when they are performed with faith? In the Prabhaskanda it is said, Krishna's name is the sweetest of sweet things, the most auspicious of auspicious things, the transcendental fruit of the vine called Vedic literature. O best of the bhrigus, chant even once, either with faith or contempt, it is the center. These pious deeds that increase one's devotion for the Lord are all eternal pious deeds. As these pious deeds gradually become more powerful, they lead to faith in the association of devotees and the performance of pure devotional service. Because of his past temporary misdeeds, a person may take birth in a yavana's home. And because of past eternal pious deeds, he may also attain faith in pure devotional service. What is surprising about that? So we get this, because there's a mix. It's naturally going to be a mix if we're in this world. If there's no mix, means we wouldn't be here. Or we're one of the acharyas who's come down to, you know, help deliver others. So we see here is that there's the eternal pious deeds, the activities of devotional service, and there are the temporary pious deeds that are engaged in for the purpose of the eternal pious deeds. It's engaged in devotional service. It's material piety, but because it's engaged in the spiritual piety, the temporary pious and the eternal pious, therefore it helps situate you in the eternal pious acts. And then those eternal pious acts, even though they're not done with great faith, even still by performing them, that brings one to the platform of taking up the association of devotees, and then that progresses one further to the platform of pure faith. Right? So we see what is there. It means you have the devotional path, you have these other things that help put us on that path. Right? And then it goes. They don't give bhakti, but they help us to have the faith in it. Right? Because if you have faith in material life, how you'll have faith in spiritual life? So by performing it for the purpose of spiritual life, then it helps us, it reduces our attachment to the material and helps us gain that faith in the spiritual. Like that. So in that way, then you would have those who, they have that faith, so they take up devotional service, but because of some misdeeds, then they are born in the Yavana's home,
like that. You see, sometimes even the demigods, they do something wrong. They end up as trees or as snakes or as fish or, you know, something for some time. And then when that curse has been alleviated, then they go back to their position in the heavenly planets. So in the same way, as a devotee, also by misdeeds and that, may find themselves in a compromised position. But that doesn't mean that it will actually get in the way of devotional service. The difficulty is that the tendency is not to perform pious activities. And so then the taste for material existence will increase in a negative way. While if one's born in a good family, then one is performing temporary pious activities. That will also increase the taste for the material world, but in a pious way. So, but it's closer to engaging those into devotional service. So therefore it's considered better. A pious person is considered than an impious. But strictly speaking, devotionally, it doesn't really matter. Because devotional service doesn't depend upon it either. This makes some sense?
Yeah. Just to ask you, what's the element that makes this pious activities conducive to be attracted to bhakti?
Only if they're engaged, if they're done in a mood of devotion.
But by themselves?
By themselves, no.
So what's the element?
How do you say? Technically, then you have to know what's going on, how it's working. See, chanting Hare Krishna, whether you understand how it works or not, you'll get the spiritual benefit from it. You'll either, if you know that it's Krishna in this, then it's like more directly devotional activities. It means you're getting that kind of understanding. It increases one's devotion for Krishna. If one doesn't know, it increases one's faith in devotees and in the process that you will take it up seriously. You know, somebody just comes out, sees the Rath Yatra going by. It's nice, they take part in a nice festival, maybe they come and chant a little bit with the devotees and then go away. That will bring them closer to taking seriously the association of devotees and the process of devotional service. Well, the devotees that are already in the process, it is increasing their faith in Krishna and in the whole thing. You know, so their devotion is increasing that way. So, in other words, you're going from off the path to on the path, and on the path to perfection. So devotional activities done where you don't know them, unknown pious activities, agyata sukriti, then help situate you on the path, that you take up the path. Because it is devotional service, but it situates you on the path that you want to do devotional service. You have faith in devotional service, faith in the sadhus. Then if you're on the path, so you know what's going on, like that, and you're trying and endeavoring, then to that degree that you're endeavoring, then your progress will be more dynamic. Because then you know what the goal is, you know everything. So now it's not unknown pious, it's known pious activities. So then same varnasha will be the same thing. On its own, then it means people perform activities of varnasha because they know what it is, they're trained in it. In varnashram, you have to train to be a mother, a father, a son, a husband, a wife, a teacher, a king, a guru, a priest. You have to be trained. It's not automatic that you know. You may have some people who are very, very pious. So just from so much habit of life after life after life, then there's some things naturally they'll be inclined towards. Like that. But technically one has to be trained in varnashram. It's not something, animal life, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That just springs from the heart. Because every life we've done that. So that's the thing that we're most accustomed to. But specifically pious activities that we have to be trained. We won't know them. The tendency you see children, they don't behave in a pious way. We say they're innocent, but they don't behave in a pious way. Right? They see somebody eat, they just grab it. They want something, they jump into line first. They're totally self-centered. Absolutely, totally self-centered. They have to be trained to notice that there's other people and that it means happiness is actually based on interaction with other people. That's a higher happiness than the happiness of your senses and the sense objects. So you have to train them. Then they learn to be well-behaved and respectful and you know, all good qualities. But it's training. Like that. Some people just figure if they get married, they know perfectly how to be grihasthas. Right? Simply some hormones are moving in the system. They're expert at what is grihastha life and what is everything. They simply have a child. They're immediately expert in raising children. But you have to be trained how to do it. It doesn't happen automatically. As if you're naturally you know how to be a parent, but what kind of parent? A parent like a mother, like a dog mother, a cat mother, a cow mother. Dog mothers, they're sitting there, they'll feed their children as long as there's nothing around for them to eat. As soon as somebody comes by and drops something on the ground, that mother dog completely forgets that the children are there and just walks over there and starts eating. Like that. But she's being a good mother dog. You can't expect better. Right? But a cow won't do that. Cow is taking care of the calf, she won't be eating this, that. Full attention is on the calf. Right? So if we're leaving it up to the modes of nature, yes, we can say that one has produced a child, one has attachment to the child, and that attachment we will agree to say, yes, that is affection, that is love, that is something, you know, of a noble nature. But then, what kind of attachment, what kind of affection is it? That is the thing. That becomes the difficult, yes.
Maharaj, could you give some comments about the three kinds of agyata sukriti? This bhakti-sukriti, jnana-sukriti, and jnana-sukriti?
There's bhakti-sukriti, karma-sukriti. No, karma-sukriti, jnana-sukriti, and bhakti-sukriti. So karma-sukriti means you've done a pious activity, so it naturally produces a seed and desire to perform more of that. You've done something nice, you know, you helped an old lady across the street or something, then it increases in the heart the idea to do such a thing again. Like that. Jnana-sukriti is you've gotten into studying, trying to understand through knowledge something, and the taste is that by doing that, then the desire for doing more of it is there. So bhakti sukriti means by performing a devotional activity, then the desire to perform devotional activities is then planted.
So it is related to what you just said before.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like that. But we see the key point in this is like, but then it means bhakti only comes from bhakti. And karma and jnana don't produce bhakti. So then how do you get it? Because you can only do it if you've done it. You understand? This is the point that this Chudamani can't understand. His point is, I perform karma and jnana, then I'm able to perform bhakti, because those pious activities create bhakti. But they don't. You can be the most pious person, you can be Lord Brahma, most pious person in the universe, and still not be a devotee. So that is the difficulty. He has all the knowledge. No one knows more than him. No one's done more pious work than him. But still, he can be a non-devotee. So therefore, the key is one gets devotional service from the devotees. That's the thing. By the grace of the devotees, then you come in contact with devotional service. They arrange. Devotees arrange the Rath Yatra. Devotees are engaged in the Rath Yatra. They made sure it went down the main street, not some back street where no one would see it. You know, they arrange the Harinam and the book distribution and the festivals and the prasad distribution and all these things. That then we came in contact with by their grace, and we took prasad or saw something or heard the holy name like that. That starts the process. And if we don't reject it, right? We may think it's funny. It means like the punks on the side of the road laughing at the Hare Krishna's going by. If they're not rejecting it, they're getting benefit. Or if they just say this is nonsense and this and that, and you know, then they may get no benefit. like that. But you know, even if they're just, you know, oh, it's just all funny stuff, then, you know, they get benefit, everybody else gets benefit. Like that. So they haven't rejected. So then again, they'll take us some more. You know, maybe, you know, late, sooner, maybe later. It may take days or weeks or months, may take years, may take lifetimes, that they accumulate enough of those situations in which then they seriously have faith in the association of devotees and take up the process. As we see from Shraddha comes Sadhu Sangha. Then the process actually starts. If you only have Shraddha and don't associate with the devotees, then we see the process doesn't really dynamically start. Right? One may say, well, what about the person sitting in their home just reading Prabhupada's books, but then they're associating with Prabhupada. Like that. And then that will then expand it to bring it into the association of other devotees, the community of devotees. So only by association of devotees. So technically, we say Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Vajana, Kriya. That first is Shraddha, then is association, then takes seriously taking up the process. But technically, to have the faith, you have had Sadhu, Sangha. But that Sadhu Sangha, you didn't really know what Sadhu Sangha was. Therefore, in that, it gains the seed of devotional service. And then by that being cultivated, you know, then it brings you to the point of actual faith. And then from that faith, then you seriously take up the association. Yes?
Maharaj, we find that when the Kirtan, the Rathayatra is going on the streets, many people will hear the name, many people may dance and take prasad, but only very few take up devotional service. So what does make the difference between the ones that take devotional service and the ones that, having the same external influences, some take and some don't take? What?
Time. It's just time. It's just a matter. Main thing is that those who take it up, many times it may be seen that they have done that many, many times before. And so therefore it has come to the point where it's increased to the amount that they have faith in devotional service. The other also influential is how much they're actually looking for answers. You know, if they find that they're not satisfied with this world, that there seems to be something lacking, then those persons will be more inclined when they come in contact with it. But it could also be said that even that has come from this devotional activities in previous life. So basically it's by the mercy of the devotees only that we actually are able to take up. Many times we think, yes, because I was very serious in thinking about, you know, what is the absolute truth and all this and that, and therefore that's why I came to devotional service. But Jnana can't give bhakti. Really. So just the search for God, that's not necessarily devotion. You have to actually have an understanding who is God and everything. Because devotion means you have somebody and you like them and you want to do something for them. Right? So just trying to figure out who's God, what's going on in this world, all these things, that's the beginning. But generally it's seen that then one can take up devotional service. But that still is given by the devotees. Right? Because such persons, many people may come in contact with devotional service but not accept it. They may not accept that this is the path. So to be able to accept that this is the path, then some may say is that's because in previous lives then you've had the opportunity to do these things. And so when enough of that is there, then when in this life it's natural that you're going to find some discrepancies because you don't have the faith in the material world as a source of happiness and fulfillment. So, but that's come because of having done devotional activities. But those were given by the devotees, not by us. Because it's agyata up to this point. We didn't know what it was, so we weren't planning on doing it. Just by the arrangement of the devotees, we've done it. Then, in this life, the fruit of that is that searching for these things and having that quest of who am I, why am I here, having the doubts about the material world. Then when we come in contact with the devotees, then this may have been the time that then we were able to take it seriously. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Therefore, that's why one should be humble. You know, not that by my own, yes, you know, I chose to come here and I chose, no, it's by Krishna's arrangement of devotees. Does that make sense?
Sometimes I wonder, there's a quote from Prabhupada that says that devotional service is so powerful and sublime that once begun, one is dragged to ultimate success.
Yeah. Dragged. Depending on how much we're fighting back, then it may be quicker or slower. Quicker or slower. Means because it can be fed. You come in contact, there's no rule that someone, one time may be enough. Come in contact and then one takes it. Generally it seems to be, because they always mention lifetime, so it seems to be, it says that one who actually takes up the process of devotional service, that's not a gyata sukriti, one who actually seriously takes it up, then it's said that they've finished, they've done all the things, they've done all the karma, the jnana, the yoga, they've done everything that there is to do, been in all species of life, all positions in that there is, and has seen that there's no satisfaction. You know? And that they've also, it says, that those who take up seriously chanting, then for many, many lifetimes have been in contact with it. But still, it's only by the grace of the devotees. It's still unknown. You know? So it's so powerful, it will bring one. A few lifetimes is nothing much compared to being in the universe since time immemorial. Does that make sense? We've been here so long that a few lifetimes is nothing in comparison. Okay. Plus we see is then you know, like the charyas, they're able to create like a flood of this good fortune. Like that. So then it becomes, you know, it's directed to completely engage people. Because before, devotees would have a tendency to be very humble and shy, stay out of the way. So they would perform their activities, and if someone by accident came across them, you know, means it's your Krishna's arrangement, but whatever. Then they would get something, this, that. But then when you just take some big festival and plunk it right down in the middle of the park or the beach where everybody is, then, and it's not just a little engagement, it's a lot of engagement, you know. There's so much happening, so much sound and activities and food and all this, that within a very short time, what would normally be gained over many lifetimes, you may gain in a couple hours. That aspect also is there.
And that makes a special flavor for the Sankirtan movement, because it brings so many people in contact with that rare thing of devotional service then.
Yes. Especially we see the as given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura, where you go right in the middle of the Maya, and that's where you preach and stuff like that. It's where all the people are, go there. So that's a speciality of his, like that. Because before, we see up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then the Indian society was pious. They basically followed the Varnashram, they followed the Vedas quite nicely. But around the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then we see kind of a change. We start to become influenced by the Western thing. So then the methods need to be slightly different. It means before, people are pious, they'll go to the temples, they'll do these things. Then you're having a big program there, yes. Then naturally they'll be there. But we see with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then as exemplified by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his mood was take it out to the people. Like that. And then Prabhupada then was found the formula to make it work, you know, in the West, make it work around the world.
It's seems that devotees are watering seeds of devotional service in different people, and even they don't know about it. And when it will do enough for seed to start to grow, then people can start their devotional service consciously. But then after, when they start, can we say then they do it by themselves, continue watering, or still it depends?
Yeah, always dependent upon the association of devotees.
But it is like half-half, and you're already devoting consciously.
Why half-half? What is the advantage of saying half-half?
I just want to understand, do we do something for our devotional devotion, or devotees continue to cultivate our devotion up to the...
What would be the benefit of... I mean, what is the advantage of that you are doing it and not the devotees?
No, nothing. I just want to understand, my endeavors, do they mean something?
But what are your endeavors? How are you able to endeavor? Is it by your own conviction and your own facilities, your own everything?
Like if I chant holy name somewhere.
Yes, but just, how is it you have the holy name?
Yeah.
Your holy name? You know, I mean, you went out and you manufactured it, or?
In other words, you get from devotees everything.
You get from devotees, right? Yeah. And then the ability to, and how to chant it, who do we get that from?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
From Guru.
Yeah. Then the ability to chant, where do we get that from? Right? Understand? So therefore, we will see it that we're completely dependent upon the devotees. We have to make our endeavor to follow what the devotees have given us. But still that ability and all that is coming from them anyway. Right? Because otherwise if it's I'm doing it, then it's going to be me with Krishna. Right? It's not going to be myself as a servant of the servants of Krishna. Right? So that then changes the flavor.
That means in the beginning, the people that are accepting association of devotees without their own endeavor, and then when they understand devotional service is something what they want to do, then they do it consciously. In other words, they continue to...
It's conscious, but we didn't say it's their own endeavor. Just like this, let us say your Guru Maharaj says, okay, take this letter and go over to the temple and give this to this person. So that's your service? Okay. The authority to do that activity is yours? The inspiration to do that activity is yours? You understand? So therefore, that is why then the disciple thinks that only by the mercy of the Guru and the Vaishnavas and Krishna, then we're able to be engaged in the devotional process. We have the desire to do, but making the body work, do we do that? Like you make yourself breathe and you make your blood flow and you make the cells change and you make the digestion work and right? You make your eyes blink. You do all that, right?
No.
No. So then the only difference is that because the things that we don't think about those things, right? They're going on. We don't even consider them. Things that we do that are valuable to us, because it'll be different from person to person. Because we desire it and then we see we're able to do it, then we say, I'm doing it. But we're not doing it any more than you're making your heart beat. Right? Or you're making your blood flow. Or you're making the cells do their work and change and all that. You understand? We're not doing any more than that. Just we're not desiring that those things go on. Because that's not the field of our interest. And our field is, I want to walk to the temple. So because you say, I want to walk to the temple, and we find that then the body is able to get up and walk out the door, then I'm walking. But the same modes that make the heart beat is the same modes that make you get up and go to the temple. You see?
Then what is ours in this process?
The desire only.
Only choice.
The choice. But the choice that I want to go to the temple rather than go to the, you know, go to the movies.
But if the desire was awakened through association, that means yes. Even desire is not ours. Like if devotee inspired me to go to the Mangalam.
No, they inspire, yes. Means, of course, we see it as their mercy. The point is it's their mercy. But our choice is to stay under the protection of their mercy or to stay under the protection of Maya. Right? Mm. So this is where it's very essential, the point. Means before getting into any of these technical, you know, esoteric aspects of tattva and all these different things, fine points of how all these energies are working, is we must accept the principle, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. I'm not the Lord and enjoyer. If that's there, then this understanding is inspiring. Though it's the process, it's using jnana. Right? It's the process of jnana, which is then overlaid on top of karma, you know, our activities that we're going to do with the body. But if we have the mood that I am servant of Krishna, then these kind of things are inspiring, and it's a field we can work in and be active. But if we're still thinking, I am the controller and enjoyer, then as soon as we hear, I am not the one that's making it happen, then immediately we lose enthusiasm to work. Right? Then it's kind of like, well, why I should be... So therefore, then, one steps back to the platform of activity and just does activity and don't worry about it. Just wash the pots, don't worry about it. It serves to Krishna. And then we're feeling, you know, I'm washing the pots and I'm putting this one here and I got rid of that stain and I did all these things. So there's still the ego is then engaged in Krishna's service. Right? So that brings us then closer to performing those activities in a pure state rather than an impure state. Right? Because the impurities means I and mine. You know, it's my work. And I am the one that's doing it. Right? These things. So, but in the purified state, then those can help us. We're able to separate ourselves from the karma and jnana. And we're not doing the karma for our purposes, but for Krishna's purposes. And the jnana, it's not us we're figuring out, it's how to better serve Krishna. Does this make some sense here? Or are we getting really too esoteric? You understand? It means these technical points of jnana, they're only useful if the process of bhakti and us as Krishna's servant has been established. That's why you see, even though it's a lower level than bhakti, it's explained after bhakti in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? In general form, no, I'm servant of Krishna, Krishna's God, I'm a servant, material world, the world is a place of misery. Right? These things are known. So since the goal is to please Krishna, the process of devotional, so I should engage. So that's karma yoga. Right? Means there's two levels. One is karma yoga, means I'm performing these activities of yoga because this is the directions of God. Right? We see that. Then we see then Krishna explains jnana yoga in the fourth chapter. Right? Then what is knowledge on all these things? Then he takes the two of them, puts them together in the fifth chapter. Because otherwise you have two chapters on karma yoga. I have two chapters on karma yoga. Because one is that after understanding jnana, then it's established. Right? In knowledge you're performing karma yoga. So that becomes nishkam karma yoga. Right? Without knowledge it's sakam. With knowledge it's nishkam. Right? But the real technical fine points that situate on the platform of liberation, those are only given after bhakti has been introduced. Right? In the middle six chapters. Middle, yeah. Once you understand bhakti is the top, then you can handle all these technical things, how the modes work and how all these things and how psychologically things happen and all that. Otherwise, then when one gets into that, one can get either into a personal path or one can be uninspired. So if I'm not doing it, then why I should do anything? And so will one do nothing? No, one will take up, you know, mundane activities. Because that I'm doing, yes, I'm doing that. But these spiritual activities, I'm not doing it, you know, it's by the mercy of the devotees and this and that, and it was true. That makes some sense?
Regarding what you were saying before, those three stages, from the perfectional stage, from the very beginning, so is a general rule that even knowing that there are some exceptions, is a general rule that
some exceptions too?
That,
but it's coming. Yeah, it's just not coming.
That no matter in which position is one person, if it is brahmachari or grihastha, any position, if he is still endeavoring with material things, he has to come back to the material world because he has not attained the perpetual state.
Means if someone has any attachment from the material world, then you have to be in the material world to fulfill that desire. You can't be in the spiritual world.
Even having practiced devotional service.
Yeah, but that means how much you've practiced. Right? If you practice 60% and 40% is not, where in the spiritual world are you going to deal with that 40%?
Yeah, so the
only, you have to perform that here.
The only option to go out is to attain the perfectional stage.
Perfectional stage is to be completely absorbed in Krishna. So that can be done, one can while one's, see there's two stages one can do this. One is while one's still in the body, one can come to that platform and then be situated in the spiritual world even though you're in this body. The other is at the time of leaving this body, then you don't maintain any material attachments and you think of Krishna alone. Krishna says, think of me alone. He doesn't say, just think of me and your daughter and your money and your car and this. No, he says, just me. Then you'll go to him. Otherwise, you think of him and these other things, then one will be situated as a devotee. But one will have to, whatever was those focus, one will have to be in a situation in which he can interact with those needs. Does that make some sense?
Another question is, if material pious activity creates some material credit, and in the case of devotees, particularly helping to plant seeds on others, and not being, big preachers or big mass leaders, just simple people doing little engagement, which special credit to get them?
What is the purpose of this?
I mean, I was thinking in the last chapter where Krishna says to Arjuna that especially those persons who are explaining or giving knowledge about him, Atma Tattva, to others, they have a special position for Krishna. So I was thinking about those, devotees, not big preachers, not big, but just doing small, say, the Ratra Yatra, just painting the car or simple things, but which are connected with the endeavor, the whole endeavor, to plant seeds on general public.
It means they'll get benefit. It means the ones who are doing the direct will be most dear.
and those who are assisting them will also be dear. Because something that's in the pursuance of another cause is also considered to be like that cause. But it's through the devotees. In other words, it's always through the devotees.
And in that case, they have a, let's say, better spiritual position than those that are endeavoring in spiritual activities in devotional service, but not having direct connection to spread the Krishna consciousness. I mean, those who are helping to spread are in a better position, definitely.
It's recommended, since the Sankirtan mission is the process for this age. It's one can, wherever one is, whatever situation, one can help. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Jari Deko Tari Baha Krishna Dash. Whoever you see, whoever you meet, you tell them something about Krishna. So you don't have to have a big arrangement to help others in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not a, it depends very much upon the individual. Like that, and what they're conscious of. Basically, they're conscious, then it makes it easier. You know? They understand this is good and try to expand it, try to spend it, and it's good. If they're just taking part, then it's nice. They'll still get credit.
But those devotees who are not doing so much preaching field, but they help other devotees, if they do less, but they same time they serve to those who are even more merciful than Krishna, whom easier to satisfy. It means anyway, some balance is here. They do less, but they serve to Vaishnavas whom you can easily satisfy, and they're getting a lot of mercy also. Because the devotees who are preaching directly, some they're doing a lot. Krishna gives them mercy, but somebody helps the devotees. Somebody in the temple, fixed temple. But when the devotees are satisfied, they're giving mercy to those who help.
That's that. Krishna also.
It's easier to satisfy devotees, therefore, if somebody is doing the right mood, then he should get the same mercy as those devotees who serve Krishna directly.
Yes, but then they get the same, but then those who are doing also get something special, because they're making that endeavor. They're engaging so many others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
No.
It's like if one person is engaging 100 persons, all those 100 persons are getting benefit, but that one person gets the benefit of engaging 100 persons. So there's still, it's everybody's gaining, but at the same time there's something special. That's why Krishna says it's special. Yes, means you can get to Gokul. You don't get to Golok, you get to Gokul. And then that 10, 20, 30%, has to be burnt off. But it just means then it's burnt off there. You know, so better to burn it off here. But in any case, as long as it has to be, that's why we see the example is that, you know, it's that we see so many of the demons come and so many situations that are difficult. So in those situations, and those last bits are burnt off. That, because going to the spiritual world isn't the perfection. Developing pure, unalloyed love for Krishna, that's perfection. Yeah, he's Duryodhana also, he had direct personal association with Krishna. Yeah. Duryodhana was asking Krishna, you come to my place and eat.
And Krishna says, oh, I'm sorry, I already have an invitation to Vidura's house. You know, his point is he will give all luxurious, all kingly that service, but then you go to Vidura's house, well, you get some simple, something simple.
Banana skin.
But that was the So the point is having that direct association, being in the same place, isn't the perfection. Having love for Krishna, that's the perfection. So when we say going back to Godhead, we mean developing pure and avoid devotion for Krishna, not just that we're in the spiritual world, so therefore there's no problems here. So that's why I said that the devotee his desire is not to go back to Godhead. His desire is to develop love for Krishna. But you know that means if you have love for Krishna, you may be there, you may be here, whatever Krishna means. But generally that kind of person is always there with Krishna. But that's not what he's looking for, because then you want to be there just because it's an out of the material world. That's the inspiration, is that there's no material misery and pain and difficulty, so we want to go back to Godhead. So that's one side of it. You know, it's good because it's progressive, because then you understand that material world is temporary and a place of misery. So that is the root of our being here in the material world, because we think it's eternal and full of happiness. And that's why we stay around. And if we know, then we want to get out. But when you get out, what will you do? You go back to Godhead, what will you do? Unless you have pure love for Krishna, then how you'll be engaged? Like that. So therefore the desire to come to that. That's the focus. The other is there. So when we say our endeavor is, when we say one should endeavor to be qualified to go back to Godhead, that means you have to have love for Krishna. Perfection is the prayojana, the goal is pure love for Krishna. That's the actual need of the soul. Whether they're in the spiritual world or not, Arjuna is here. The leelas of Arjuna is never in the spiritual world. Arjuna is eternally with Krishna in the material world. You don't have Arjuna in Vaikuntha. You only have Arjuna here. Right? So Arjuna is a devotee who always assists Krishna in his pastimes here. So Narayan, Krishna and Arjuna, like in so many ways. They come and they perform all these wonderful pastimes. But they just spend the time going from universe to universe to universe to universe. So they're just eternally on the preaching circuit here. It's not they come sometimes. Arjuna doesn't come sometimes and then go back. He only performs his services here. So therefore, it's not that. So one can say, well, Krishna is, then that's a spiritual world. But like we said, Duryodhana is also there. Like that, the Brahmins, right? The Yagyic Brahmins, they were right there. They saw Braja Krishna in Braja. And no interest. Like that. So that's not the perfection. So you can be in the spiritual world and not have love for Krishna. But if you have love for Krishna, then wherever you are, you're in the spiritual world. So going back to Godhead means you develop love for Krishna. Automatically, you're in the spiritual world, wherever you are. So that's a automatic side benefit.
And the
Dhamma
is revealed.
Yeah, the Dhamma is revealed. Otherwise, you know, they say Kamsa didn't appreciate the glories of Mathura. Right? You know, Putana and the Nakasura and Agasura, they didn't realize the glories of Vrindavan, though they were there. But Salva, he was there at Dwarka, didn't appreciate the glories. But, so yeah, that point is. If you're Krishna conscious, then automatically the Nandana is revealed and you live that. You had something? No.
You're not good. You're saying that to go back to Krishna, we have to think only of Krishna. And then attach to Krishna, we love other not loving. And in the society of devotees, we have so many relationships with devotees and affection and love for devotees to help us in actual consciousness. So, what happens to those attachments, those spiritual attachments?
Is that the devotees are helping us. It's one thing, the spiritual master, then thinking of that person as they're representing, if you're thinking of them like that, you know, rather than you're thinking, well, who's going to arrange their breakfast or something, you know, then that's another thing. Then one has to come back here to be able to arrange breakfast, you know. But if it's a matter of dependency, and that surrender, you know, by the mercy, then thinking of Krishna, the spiritual master, the eternal associates of Krishna, then it's the same. Like that. And other relationships is then, that, what is it based on? Is it purely based on devotional service, or is it also just because our conditioned nature, their conditioned nature match, and so then we're able to appreciate each other's association? And in that association, then we can take up more direct or less direct devotional activities. So then that then might have a tendency to bring us back here. Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. You know, so if the devotee you think of is a pure devotee, then it doesn't matter. Or if they've attained perfection, it doesn't matter. Then thinking of them is thinking of Krishna. Like, but if it's just you have a good friend, and you know, if you die now, then you know who's going to water her posies because she's out of town for 2 weeks, then it's a problem. Does that make sense?
Can we say then activities which we perform, sadhana, going to the temple, and if it is performed without devotion or without the idea to cultivate emotion of devotion, that activity is not connected to devotional service?
No, it's devotional service, it's just you won't get as much benefit as you would get if you did that with proper attitude and proper understanding. But devotional activities always give bring you closer to Krishna. Like that. Maybe they bring you slowly, maybe they bring you quickly. What we're distinguishing between is, we're making, right at this point, three distinctions. Between pure devotional service, then devotional activities in pursuit of pure devotional service. Right? It's devotional service, but it is not on the purest platform. It may be mixed with some other, with karma and jnana. But it will bring us to pure devotional service. The other is taking pious activities and engaging them in Krishna's service. So those will also help lead us to devotional service because they will pull out the attachments to this material world. While performing the devotional activities will draw us towards Krishna. Understand? And how much one's engaged in varnashram depends upon how much attachments you have. If you have minimal or no attachments to the material world, you only have to engage in devotional service. You have some attachments to the material world, then to engage those attachments, then you have to follow varnashram. Otherwise, what's the alternative? Yeah. How do you know how to engage those in devotional service?
And can we say then, there is no difference, external difference between the pure devotional activities and not pure. But only difference is when the not pure devotional service is when we perform the same activities, but we think about our material desires at the same time.
Yes.
And when we give up those desires and increase devotion, I mean just emotion, then externally nothing will be changed. Same activities going there, going
yes.
again. But we will call it pure devotional service when it is done with pure devotion.
Yes.
And then that third kind of activities, which is pious karmic activities, is something what is not externally look like devotional service, but done with some quantity of the devotion.
Yeah, it means devotion to Krishna.
Devotion.
Doesn't mean devotion to your child or devotion to your wife or husband.
But if the same activities will be done with pure devotion.
But what is pure devotion?
With great desire to please Krishna.
Yes, that's it. When you want to please Krishna by this, since I'm attached to my family, then I should take care of the family how Krishna wants families to be taken care of. So taking care of my family according to how Krishna wants, you know, then to please Him I'm doing it in this way.
Mm-hmm.
That will then free one from the material attachments and bring you closer to Krishna.
Then from very beginning up to the highest level, the only what is changing is devotion increasing.
Yeah.
Externally, not so much changing.
Means the Kanista follows sadhana bhakti, the Madhyam follows sadhana bhakti. And the Uttam, who is then setting example for others, also follows sadhana bhakti. So all you'll see is sadhana bhakti.
Oh.
And then the activities of the varnashram that is also dovetailed in the pursuit of sadhana bhakti.
Then that is main part of our everyday's practicing, that emotion. Is it right?
Yeah, but the emotion is real. So emotion may not arise while the heart is dirty. So therefore, one is using intelligence. That's why it's called buddhi yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's by intelligence, then we situate ourselves on the path. Right?
Is performance as duty?
Yeah, because we know it should be done. This is the process that will get me pure and loyal devotion, so therefore I'm doing it because this is what has to be done. You know, the duty can be performed with you know proper emotion or without. So generally, in English, the word "perform your duty" nowadays generally means without, unless you connect it to something. Sometimes you can connect it to family life. You can say he's a very dutiful husband or a very dutiful father. It's seen in the good light. Or, you know, in the how you say, the armed forces, that he's, you know, very dutiful, like that. That's good, seen a good light. But in general, if you say something's done out of duty, it means the heart's not in it, and you just do it because you have to. That's seen as a negative way. But the Vedic, it's just the opposite. This duty is seen as a very noble thing. And so it's basically in the field of, you know, in great emotion. You know, it's out of duty to your family you're doing. Because of your affection for them, you perform these duties. You do this, you do that. So it's actually imbued with a lot of emotion. Well, the Western idea is that it's impersonal. That's why it's also very difficult for the Western kind of mind to accept the concept of the rules and regulations of varnashram. Because they just see there's so many dry rules, rather than these are the definitions of what is emotion. Varnashram is the definition of what is emotional interaction with others. That's what it is. But you have to know what is emotion. That's the thing. And for, unfortunately, many in this world, they have not actually tasted emotion. Right? Pure emotion means pure material emotion. They have lower levels of emotion, anger, greed, envy, lust, you know, which are all created, you know, which, how you say. So generally it's, yeah, like that. But a nobler forms of emotion haven't been seen. People don't know what it's like to have a father or a mother that cares for you, or a husband or a wife that cares for you, or an authority that cares for you. So because they've never experienced it, they don't actually know what is the realm of duty. Because without experiencing that, then you will be situated on the next level down, which is being self-centered. You know, what you want. Though you can extend that to, okay, the same principle is I'm self-centered, but I can accommodate that others have their need of self-centeredness. So, and I can even get behind helping them in that way. I can help them, you know, perfect their self-centeredness. You know, in a positive way. You know, like that. You know, some social service, some other things like that. You're helping them get on their feet so they can get themselves together. But it's still not on the level of understanding the emotion of one human being to another, because that social work, basically you're dealing with the tattva. There may be individuals in it, you may deal, but you can also deal on that and never do it. Someone can be working on a campaign to save the whales and never have even met a whale. So they just, the tattva are just the group of whale they have a concern for. But it's still impersonal. Right? But it's, because you don't know the whale. You don't have a relationship with the whale. Some, the workers in the field may know this whale, that whale, you know, from their research, and they get to know them by markings or some other way. But still, how much can you have with them? Does that mean? So it's extended. It's your own self. Oh, the whale needs to also live. I need to live. I can appreciate that. And my intelligence tells me I should also grant others that facility. My self-centeredness shouldn't be so big that it leaves no room for anybody else. So I will adjust it where others are also accommodated. And then in a subtle way, I can, my self-centeredness can go for the whole thing because I'm accommodating the others. I'm a nice guy. Rather than I'm a bad guy and I just fill up the whole space and there's no space for anybody else. But still there's a higher level of emotion in that, and duty, that then has some direction based on relationships, that the commitment to making a relationship function. Like that. And then, so of that, then Varnashram gives the most scientific delineation of what are relationships and how they work. You know? Because nowadays, as people don't really know, like, what is a man or what is a woman? So how will they really know what is the relationship between a man and a woman? Because unless you know what is a woman, what are the needs, what's a man, what is his needs? And so, therefore, and then what's in common, in which the two individuals can assist each other in their needs, at the same time fulfill their own needs. That's why we said before, in the beginning of the class, it needs training, you have to know. You know? That's why Bhagavatam is explaining what is man, what is woman, what is king, what is servant, what is everything. Sometimes it's taken and used badly. Knowledge can be used nicely, it can be used badly. But if you don't know, like let's say you want to be a teacher and you want to work with children. So if you're under the impression that children are so pure and innocent and wonderful and great and nice and fabulous and all that, you'll never make it as a teacher. Because kids aren't that. Kids aren't that. So if you understand that kids are, you know, have shortcomings. And so the teacher's duty is to teach the children how to overcome those shortcomings and to, you know, make themselves a individual that can move within the society of individuals. Then a teacher can get somewhere. If you already think they're so wonderful and perfect, then then one, what is there to do? Because they're already wonderful and perfect. There's nothing to do, so no need to be a teacher. Or the other side is, if you're thinking like that, you're going to be surprised, because children don't know. And so therefore, when they do something wrong, you'll be surprised and be disheartened. So you have to start with the principle that, you know, kids have shortcomings. You know? Like that. Because they're young. Therefore, the sensual lust is not there. So that makes, that's what we call innocence, that's all. But they're not necessarily innocent. You know, kids kill bugs and harass each other and push each other off of things and break each other's arms, and they do all kinds of nonsense. Right? So if we understand that, then we can get somewhere. But if we don't, then it'll be just an emotional thing, and then we'll be very surprised, very disappointed. So that's why then the Vedic literatures point out what are the glories and shortcomings of man, what are the glories and shortcomings of woman, you know, of a teacher, of a student, of all these things. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? Weaknesses have to be watched out for. And if, you know, if the husband knows what the wife's weaknesses are, he'll help in those. And where the strengths are, he'll respect those, and vice versa. That's the proper use of this. Then you can help. Otherwise, if you think man thinks woman's perfect, then when she's not perfect, he'll be disappointed. Or woman thinks man is perfect, when he's not, then she'll be disappointed. So that's why it's based on knowledge. Then you can make it work. Otherwise, how does the modern approach it? Right? There is some sentimental this, that. But the real thing that they go after is knowledge. They do psychological tests, they do so many surveys, this and that. Then they figure out, oh, woman's brain is different from the man's brain. That's why there's a difference. Woman wants these things, man wants these things. And then by knowledge, same process, but it's speculative rather than Shastra. Shastra's already said, why waste the time? Right? And that they go through so many things and then figure out, then based on that knowledge, then they try to make it work. Oh, when the wife says this, actually she means that. You know? So therefore, don't get upset. You know? Understand that just by the nature, she's going to say like that. Or the other way around. The man says like this, it doesn't mean that, it means this. Then they kind of like figure out how to live with each other. But it's all speculative. There's no God at the center, no standard, or anything. But the Vedic system is, you have a standard. What is relationship? You have all the different elements, and then you have, you know, God's pleasure. And then you put all this together, and then you get a process that's progressive. That makes sense?
Some devotees state that dharma, varnashram dharma, produces interaction in manomaya platform, emotion.
Yes.
And that conditioning is very deep. Whereas in the modern world, in India and in the West, things are deeply into annamaya platform, maximum prana.
Yeah.
And people suffer more in annamaya. So they claim, if you start reinstituting varnashram dharma, and people will become more attached. It will become more difficult for them to give up their emotional attachments. It's better that they be sensually attached in the modern world, suffer, and they can easily take devotional consciousness.
So you're saying that it's easier to give up the attachment to your genital than it is to relationships with people. That's what is being said. Because that's the bottom line. Bottom line is sex. So what they're going to say is, it's easier to give that up than to give up relationships, to dharmic relationships with your wife. Understand? I would doubt the process.
Also do.
How we would go from anamoy to anandamoy. Because the point is in the spiritual world, you know, sense gratification, our own, is not the prominent point. self-centeredness is not the point in the spiritual world. Service is. So varnashram means it's service, but it's still it's on a material platform. So Mother Jashoda's complete care for Krishna is spiritual. In the material world, that's reflected by a mother's complete care for the child. So now it's easier to go from that platform to this than it is from where you have no... There isn't it. Because the principle is service. Varnashram, the principle is service. Modern civilization, the principle is, I am the center of the universe. I'm God, I'm the enjoyer. So it's exact opposite. See, also there's anamaya on the pious platform and ayamaya on the degraded platform. I mean, someone who's, like, say, a Kali Bhakta is on the platform of anamaya. But there's still, there's guru, there's authority. You can't tell them that their guru is, you know, just an ordinary guy. They'll get upset. The concept of parampara, of service of their deity, Kali, you know, of a process of offering flowers or whatever else is their particular process. So it's actually closer. But the Western culture is not. That's just animal life. Even animals are better. So therefore you're taking the most inferior of inferior and then claiming you just flip over. That means that there is no knowledge of what is that middle. Otherwise the statement wouldn't be made. Because otherwise, who's making that statement? If it's someone who's, let's say, a sannyasi or this or that, okay, then we can start discussing. But if this is a grihasta who lives outside, wears Western clothes, only engages in Western activities, as a philosophy, not that it's just that that's just where they happen to be situated and that's what they know and that's what they do, but it's their philosophy that this is the way to do it, then I would highly doubt that they've ever even tasted the platform of Manamaya. Otherwise, why is it there's so much great endeavor for social upliftment and social development within the society? Why there's so much talk of modern New Age thing? New Age is just an alternative to look for that platform of Manamaya. Because it's a speculative platform. New Age is a speculative platform. So it's technically within Manamaya by Tattva. But in actuality, it's not. It's in pranamaya. It doesn't actually make it to there. Because the rules are speculative. You know? I mean, so you could start immense fights between New Agers on who's the victim. Because according to philosophy, everybody's a victim. And then everybody else has to be, means there has to be a victim that's getting all the attention. So if everybody's the victim, then there's no one to give attention. You know, and then you have to establish who is, and then everybody else has to agree to give all their attention. But you see, it's always one way. Why is it one way? Because that's the way it is with the senses. The senses and the sense object, it's a one-way street. There's no enjoyment by the food of you eating it. Right? It's one way. You understand? So that's the point, is therefore even their philosophy is impersonal. It's only one way. It technically doesn't get off the anamoya platform. Therefore it gets to the level of pranamoya, because it does take into consideration life. Like that. Either in general or in specific. These are the two. The Sauryas and the Ganapatyas. Is that it's either all life should be, or, you know, in general, or it's a specific. You know, save the children, you know, save the women, save the this, save the that. You know, has a political angle, has a this, a national, and so all, so many of these different things. Justice. Economics. Like that. So therefore, that's why it's called extended sense gratification, because the principle of it is the same. Therefore, it's only one platform of rasa, though one is more noble than the other. One is more self-centered, one is extended. But manamoya is a completely different realm. It's completely different. Its padati is different. It's not so much. It's that you're serving. So you're going to get what you want out of it. But it's through performance of dharma that I get. So the focus is on the dharma. Like that. And that itself creates all kinds of, you know, things way beyond the nobility of the pranamaya. The depth of it is so much more. And people may say, you know, well, why get involved in it? But like I said, unless it's a strict sannyasi or brahmachari who's saying this, you know, or a very detached, renounced grihastha, then I would say is they're exactly looking for that manamoya. But they're looking for it in anamoya. They don't realize it's that. They think they're getting a deep, something deep. Because if not, then why are they going and working all day for the family? Just out of duty? No, because they're going to get something from it. They expect to come home and they'll have all these nice smiling faces, you know, daddy, the breadwinner is home, the lord and master and protector and all this, and then when he gets home and they find out that they don't care, the kid's, you know, playing his video game and the wife's in the kitchen, did he bring the cauliflowers? And it's kind of like, you know, what's going on? You know? And then it's, then what is it? This family's bogus. Dump this family, oh, they'll get this nice girl, she's so nice. And start a new family. Of course, she comes already with a few, like that, from the few marriages she's dumped. Like this, and that, and they just go on and on and on and on and on. So, this, that they're giving it up, by anamoya, they're going to come to the transcendental platform. No, they just go on and on and on. From this marriage, to the next marriage, to the next marriage, to the next marriage, to the next marriage. Because ana means this. This body is not behaving or interacting properly. I get that body, especially since this body is getting a little old and dumpy, and that body is looking pretty good. You know? Like that. And so then, so it's a very vicious circle. So one has to be able to look at all this with knowledge. And that's very scary, because then you may be very shocked at what are our material motives, what's behind it. Like that. So introspection is necessary, though it can be a little painful. Can be, you know, humbling. See, is that Prabhupada basically came in with the idea of just establishing basically straight Bhagavad. He just come in, they chant 64 rounds, just engage in preaching, Harinam, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but then he saw it wasn't so good, so then he started establishing the Pancharatrik system. Big temples, big deity worship, you know, three altars, everything around the deity, along with the preaching. I mean, his preaching was there, but it was going to be everything. It didn't. So then, most of the time is that in the day, and then the mornings and evenings is Pancharatrik. And even that's mixed with Bhagavad, because the Bhagavatam class and the Gita class was there, our Japa was there. But otherwise, then the Pancharatrik was then established. But then, kind of starting in the, you know, towards the mid-70s, then you could see this, that there was such a great need on the part of the devotees for their family life, their economics, their all these different things, their all these different relationships. Then you see, started talking strongly about varnashram. Because if you don't have those, you want to deal with them, yes. But then you have to do it through varnashram. That's the best system. It's most compatible with devotional service. Therefore, then he started pushing. But Varnashram is for humans. So the trick is one has to be purified enough to be a human, then you can appreciate the Varnashram system. Like that. Or at least have some human sentiment. You know, like that. But otherwise, if one's upbringing has been, you know, totally animalistic, one may not appreciate it. And the problem is because if the animal is sophisticated, then they feel that they're superior. You know? So basically the modern is, sophistication is actually the thing that's looked at. So that's many times why your sophisticated urban dweller of the West finds that there's nothing for them to gain from the, you know, more simple people of India. You know, who jump into lines and don't follow things and throw garbage on the side of the roads and all that kind of thing. And the sophisticated Westerner, what they will gain from them in the way of social. Because for them, social simply means economics. Justice system is strong, or the things are strong. Therefore, because it doesn't bother everybody else, then. But if you look at it, their sophistication is so much, they're destroying the planet. But they're so sophisticated is that they come up with, they notice it after 20, 30 years and then implement to save the planet. Right? It means the planet was doing quite well before they came along. But whatever, they're the great saviors. The planet, you know? That's it. They don't use all this, you know, funny, whatever it is, gas in the spray can. So by giving that up, then they're doing. But you'll notice that when they implement the legislation, it's not to the expense of economics. Therefore, you phase it out over the next 5 years, because there's so many big companies who are making big profit, and you wouldn't want them to go down, or the whole thing collapses. Like that. But you see, without all that sophistication, then, yes, it's a little rough and wild in, you know, like in India. But if you put Americans under the same stress and situation, they're worse. Every night in Calcutta on the main streets, the current goes off. And there's no fever. Life goes on. Everybody sits there, a candle is turned on, a generator is turned on, this and that. New York, it went off once. $1 billion worth of damage in the 60s. $1 billion in the 60s. That's not now $1 billion, that's then. Happened. 20 minutes, I think it was.
Right. A lot of rape, murder.
Yeah, everything. All nice, nice things. So this is the sophistication of the culture. But that's because everything's working nicely. If the big, fat policeman wasn't standing there, you wouldn't drive properly. If you thought you could throw the litter out the window, you'd do it. Maybe after a long, long time. But that's because on the television they always come to don't litter. In the school they tell you don't litter. You see signs, don't litter. So after, you know, a long time you kind of figure out, okay, don't litter. You know? It's not the kids that are saying that. It's not the teenagers saying that. Even the 20-year-old, maybe one or two have a feeling. It's the older people. 20, 30 years, okay, then don't litter. So if you did the same campaign here, you could get the same answer. But the difference is, as you see, just so much difference. Like that. It means shortage of petrol. It's always shortage of petrol in India. Now it's less, but now again they have people line up, this, that. Sometimes somebody cuts in and everybody yells and screams and beeps the horn, and that's it. In America, they get out of the car, walk over, and shoot the guy dead. Factually. They just shoot him dead. And then this is supposed to be sophisticated. And these people cannot learn anything from the Indians. Because they're just simple people. So this is the problem. They're so well situated in Pranamoy, they can't see that there's something beyond called Manamoy. Manamoy can be in a simple state, or can be in a sophisticated state. So, Anamoy is generally considered unsophisticated. Pranamoy is sophisticated. It's two levels of the same thing. The same principle of rasa. But Manamoy also you can have very sophisticated. The great Brahmins and kings and so many individuals, very sophisticated, though simple, like this. And then you have the transcendentalists. So one has to understand that sophistication isn't the standard. It's something that you can address. Naturally, a sophisticated person wants to see some sophisticated culture. Like that. But sophistication itself isn't perfection. Does that make sense?
There's no more true speculation and anarchy.
Yeah. Yeah. If government wasn't so strong, it'd be anarchy. That's all. It's a strong government. And that government isn't the people who are saying all those things. They don't, and if you told them how the government was working, they rebel. How the government keeps America together, you wouldn't want to know. It's a total, you know, how you say?
Degraded?
Huh? Not degraded. I'm not talking about that. It's totally just people are working, not caring what the people say.
Dictatorship.
It's a dictatorship. But it's a benevolent dictatorship. So that's what the Vedas say is the best way to run a country. Is a benevolent monarchy. It's absolute authority. But it's for the purpose of benefiting the people. The institutions that make the government work, they don't work by the people going in and pushing a button that this is what they vote for. It's people there that see this is how it has to be done and just do it, whether the people know it or don't know it. That's why it works. And in other countries that they can't get that together, it just doesn't function. Or it's a dictatorship that's not benevolent. It's self-centered. You know, you go to Africa, you get all these different people that are just warlords. You know, so many places, just warlords. They just make trouble to get control. And of course, it doesn't develop, can't function. But here, they're seeing how to create a society that everybody gets what they want. You know? And so people are controlled. They don't know they're controlled, but they are. And it's not the business of the people. It's not their field. It's the field of those who are the administrators. They know the field, they know how to deal, they know the psychology, so therefore. So the main thing is to keep them in the mood to benefit the people rather than to exploit. And if you can do that, they're the best persons to do it. Why the common person, what does he know? You know, unless you can educate the common person, but then who's going to do that? The common person's not going to do it. Still has to be those from the top to decide, yes, our people need to be educated in these areas. So still it's coming from that. The common person doesn't make the society. It's the leaders that make the society. So those who, you know, will claim that this whole thing of pranamoya is good, but even they don't know how it's working. Right? They're just there existing in America, it works nicely. And they're saying, see, this is good, America, India is not so good. But they don't really know how it's functioning. So, I mean, that's a whole, another discussion, you know, because that's all on the administrative duties. But that discussion is basically meant for those who are dealing in that field. You know, the intellectuals and the administrators that deal specifically within the political field. It's neither a tasty or a necessary discussion for everybody. You know, but it's, you know. Just so it's not clouded over, Mataji's point was is that if Varnashram wasn't such an important thing, then why is it Prabhupada, when it was so difficult, he could be speaking on so many things, or not speaking at all, that he mentioned that it needs to be introduced so that the devotees can be peaceful. Their lives will be peaceful and prosperous, and they'll be satisfied to then engage in Krishna's consciousness.
So it's called a safety net under the tight rope.
Yeah.
bhakti.
Yeah.
So the kind of devotion.
Yeah. Like that. Because then, at least this pious, you're doing it according to the direction. So if you get caught up in your family and this and that, but it's going to be, because it's connected to Krishna, then you're going to start to, it'll help bring you back onto the path. But if one rejects that, then what will one fall into? I mean, what does that mean? Anamoya means, what standard? Then how do you, okay, Anamoya is the thing, how do you raise your kid? What do you give your kid? Anamoya is the plan, what do you give your kid?
You don't, because kids are a disturbance to the conjugal relationship.
Yeah, that's true. That's a serious point. That is the point. Well noted. But at least you can give that value to your child. Yeah, so the 12 years old, they can start their own cultivation.
When you explained that Prabhupada wanted to establish first Bhagavad Mark, then he noted that not everybody can follow. He introduced Pancharatam. We did then Varnashram, but then now we can see then there are in our societies, con society, we see different devotees. Some of them are inclined more to performing more spiritual activities and not so involved in this society, then they're getting, they're criticized by others. But how then, because I know then in Mayapur some devotees, they, just yesterday somebody was explaining that they chant 64 rounds for many years and they, at the same time they perform, they do their duties as brahmacharis. And then others, they criticize them. And it seems to me then if they wouldn't do it, they would, if they did nothing, if they would do nothing, then nobody would criticize them. And as soon as they start increase their devotional service, as chanting, for example, then everybody criticize them. How then, in one society, different kind of people can communicate? Those who are more inclined in Bhagavad Marg, and they're only...
Well, Bhagavad means Bhagavad. Means it has to be, what is the purpose? One has to see what is one's purpose and all those things. You have to see, are they actually engaged? Means, why have they chosen that particular thing? It means there's a lot of discussion. Means there's no, it's probably said 16 rounds is minimal. So more is there. But then one has to be careful. But it's not at the expense of other things. Or if it's going to be that, then there's no need of other things. If they're actually going to be into the Bhagavad, great, but then there shouldn't be great endeavor for their own personal facilities, their food, their staying, their clothes, their this and that. That'll just be dependent on the Lord. But if they're engaged nicely in acquiring that, then it's mixed. So then when they doubt the emphasis on the chanting 64 rounds. If in they chant 64 rounds so they don't do other services, and then the time left and they're arranging their own material facilities, then one may doubt that 64 rounds is the best thing for them. Right? You understand? So it depends. You have to see the lifestyle. Does the lifestyle match that? Bhagavat also has a lifestyle. Pancharatrik has a lifestyle. Vedic has a lifestyle.
But generally, they can stay together anyway, different devotees.
It's another thing, it's one process, it's just where the emphasis is. It's just like you have one meal, and some take more rice, some take more dal, some take more chapati, some take more sabji. So I mean, it doesn't matter. If I'm sitting next to you, and how come you're eating more chapatis? I say, well, it's like, this and that, and chapatis are good for that. No, but modern science has said that, and he's just, what does it mean? You understand, you have a meal, you all eat, be happy. But you have to understand what you're doing. So that person also who's chanting should understand what's going on. They have to see that it's balanced. Naturally, the attraction to doing devotional activities is not so much intellectual. It's more an attraction. But at the same time, they have to see that everything else around what they're doing matches. Otherwise, then it may be too... Right? Because if it matches, no one's going to say anything. Right? But if it doesn't match, then, you know, the same devotee chants 64 rounds in the prasad hall is a pain to serve, because he always wants this, wants that, give this, give that. Then no one's going to be really pleased. If they see the person's, you know, very sane human behavior and very simple, and then that's there, it adds to the appreciation.
In other words, if the devotee is performing his activities purely, then nothing to criticize. If somebody is criticized...
Purely, yeah. It means purely in actual purity. It means purely, but you, yeah, everything's balanced. Everything's...
If somebody is always object of criticizing, then something can... there is a reason for it.
Maybe. One has to see. Also, maybe others are not trained.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. We should... Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vita Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Chaitanya Tagore.
Hare Hare Bol.